Today we're talking about Hilchos Dalet Minim. There are many good svarim that have come out of the last few years that have made this sugya much easier to learn. Especially Rav Yechiel Michal Stern Sefer Kashas Dalet Minim, the picture book with the glossy pictures, explains all of the halachas with very beautiful pictures. I took the liberty to take some of his pictures and to project them over here to make it easier for us just to talk about, to be able to describe what we're talking about. There's also a beautiful Sefer Torah's Dalet Minim written by Rav Schneebal, who's a posek in Muncie. He's a very well-known posek specifically in this area, and he wrote a Sefer Halacha, a Sefer of Tshuvas. He has two volumes. It's also an excellent, excellent work. So there are many svarim that you can use to expand on what we're going to talk about today. Let's first discuss the Esrig. The first question that you have to ask yourself about an esrog is whether it's murkav or not. Is it a grafted esrog, or is it a real esrog? Why is murkav such a problem? Says the experts will explain, the esrog tree naturally is a very weak tree. So it doesn't survive a winter very easily. So what the farmers do is they try to graft the esrog tree with other similar trees in order to strengthen it. The problem is the poskim. Most of the poskim say that an esrog hamurkav is possible for the mitzvah. They disagree about what the reason is why a murkav is chaser. Some say it's because it's chaser, it's not fully an esrog. Pasuk says, ulakachtem lachem bayom harishon, ulakachtem lachem, sounds like it has to be a lakicha tama, it has to be a complete taking. So something that's chaser is possible for the mitzvah. So they say that an esrog hamurkav is chaser because it's not completely esrog. Others say it's nebdebo avera, that because the avera of kilayim was done in order to produce this esrog, so it's possible for the mitzvah. The Magen Avraham in Siman Tofresh Mem Tes of Katan Chav Gimel gives the simplest reason. Magen Avraham says that an esrog amokav is possible because it's not an esrog. It's just not an esrog. It's not because of nefda bo aveira, not because it's chaser, but it's just not called an esrog b'chal. It doesn't have a shame esrog. That's his lashon. It doesn't have a shame esrog. They tell a story that once someone asked Rav Moshe Soloveitchik why an esrog hamurkav is possible. So he brought a Shulchan Aruch and he showed them in Siman Tov Resh Mem Ches, the title of the Siman, it says Dvar Maposlim Be'esrog. So he says, you see, it has to be an esrog. If it's not an esrog, then you can't even get to first base. So Lechora, he was just alluding to what the Magen Avraham says, that it doesn't have a shame esrog, that's why it's possible. So how do you know if it's an esrog or if it's an esrog hamurkav? So the Ramah has a famous tshuva where he says that there are four simanim for an esrog hakasher. Four simanim. One is that there are blitos, there are bumps on the esrog, as you can see over here in the picture, it's the middle, bumps on the esrog. And the ukat is shakua, the stem from which the esrog grows from the tree is shakua, it's sunken into the esrog. The peel is a thicker peel. You can't see this on the picture, but if you cut it open, you'll see that the peel is thick, as opposed to a lemon where the peel is thin. And finally, the seeds of the esrog are vertical. The seeds of a lemon are horizontal. The seeds of the esrog are vertical. These are the four simanim that the Ramah identified as simanim of an esrog. But the Chasam Sofer has a famous chumrah. The Chasam Sofer, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, he writes in a tshuva that you can't be makshir an esrog based on simanim. You have to have a mesorah. So it's based on this Chasam Sofer that many people on Makbid to dafka take esrogim, esrogi chazan ish, yanaver esrogim, Moroccan esrogim. They feel like the mesoris of those esrogim is better. Now, what does that mean it's better? It's not like they have a real mesorah. The chazan ish didn't have a mesorah on the esrog tree that he thought was an esrog. Probably what happened was that he was walking, he saw an esrog tree that was abandoned. So he said that it's very unlikely that it's murkav. The only reason why an esrog becomes murkav is if there's a profit motive. But if a tree is abandoned, then we have no reason to believe that someone was markav this tree, because they're not going to gain anything from being markav it. So it could be that the Chazon Ish saw an esrog tree, and he felt that it seems as though this esrog tree was not planted for profit. It just was there. Maybe it was a weaker tree, in fact. The old esrogei Chazon Ish were not so good. They didn't look so good. They were very shvach. Now the esrogei Chazon Ish look just as good as every other esrog. I guess they found a way, beheter, to somehow take care of the tree in such a way that the esrogim are yellow now. They never used to be yellow. They're yellow. Some have pitims, some don't have pitims. But the esrogim can look very nice. Very expensive, but they can look very nice. So it's not that you need a Mesorah from the very beginning. It's that you need as good a Mesorah as you can get. The Chasam Sofer felt that just to use the Simonim to be Mashal Yesur, he thought was questionable. That's why he said that you should have a Mesorah, and that's why people try to... There are some people who are makbid to get specific Yesurim because they feel that if not, they don't have a Mesorah, that the Yesur is really kosher. Moroccan Yesurim have a different Shaila associated with them, and that is that they don't have seeds. They don't have seeds. So there's a question, why don't they have seeds? Some claim because it's Morgoth. You can't take them. I think the Klausenberger Rebbe felt that Esrogi and Morocco are apostate. But the Satmar Rebbe was very into them. The Chaim supposedly was very into Esrogi and Morocco. He thought that the fact that they didn't have seeds didn't matter. And he felt that there was less of a likelihood that it was Morgoth. There's a Shiloh whether Esrogi and Morocco are good at all, or are they even better? Are they the best? The Badatz in Yerushalayim, the Badatz of the Eidach Redis in Yerushalayim, is Machshir Esrogim based on Simonim. They don't require Esrogim Chazanish or these other types. They just are Machshir based on Simonim. They'll take, if someone wants to sell Esrogim with the Badatz, so then they'll take a few Esrogim from the orchard and they'll cut them open and see what the seeds look like, what the peel looks like. Does it have bleatus? They'll check the Esrog for the Simonim of Ramah and they'll be Machshir based on those Simonim. So many people simply follow the opinion of the Badatz that if you're machshir based on the simonim, then it's not called a morkov, it's not choser, it's not nevda ba'avera, because it's not significant enough. If it has this simonim, even if taka you did the avera of kilayim, but if it's not mashpi on the esrog, then it's not a problem, and it has a shame esrog, so therefore you can use it. Okay, the most famous psul of esrog is if the pitum falls off, nitla pitmasa. Sure, we don't need a picture for this, but okay. Nitla pitmasa. You'll see why the picture's important. So this is what they teach the children in grade school, that if the pitum falls off, it's pasul. It's a Mishnah in Sukkah, Mishnah Nafla Medal. It says if nitla pitmasa pasul, but if nitla uktzo, it's kosher. If only the uktz, the bottom stem. And if the uktz falls off, that's okay. But if the pitum falls off, then it's pasul. Rov Rishonim explained that the pitum is not just the ball on top of the esrog, not just what we call the shoshanta. Shoshanta is the ball right on top. Most poskim assume that the pitum includes part of the stem on the bottom of the ball. So in this picture, when only the ball falls off, according to most poskim, that's still kosher. That's what the Gemara calls nitla buchnasa. Nitla pitmasa means that nitla buchnasa. Not just that the pitum fell off, not just that the shoshanta fell off, but part of the stem as well. How much of the stem has to fall off to make it possible? So the Magen Avraham says that dafka, if the entire stem, the thing that the pitum is sitting on, if that whole thing fell off, till the esrog, that's called nitla pitmaso, and that will possible. But if it's any less than that, then it's not possible. The Taz goes even further and says that not only does the stem have to fall off, but enough has to fall off that there's a chor in the esrog, there's a hole in the esrog. Sometimes when you look at an esrog, you know, they'll show you an esrog that doesn't have a pitum. So some people will look at the esrog and say, oh, did it have a pitum and it fell off, or did this grow without a pitum? The experts can tell the difference, that sometimes when it grows with a pitum and the pitum falls off, so it looks more brownish, looks more like there's a hole there. According to the Taz, if it doesn't have that hole, even if the entire eitz falls off, it's still kosher. So there is an opinion, the Ramah does quote an opinion of the Ran, that even if only nitla shoshanta, if the kadur, if the ball on top falls off, that's also possible. The Mishnah Berurah says that that's the Ran's interpretation of the Rif, but he thinks it's mistaken. He thinks that's not pshat in the Rif. It is a shita that the Ramah quotes, like they teach the children, that even if only the kadur, even if only the ball falls off, that it's possible, but the pashup shot is not like that. It has to be more. You have to have a little bit of the eitz falling off, or even more, that there's a chor in the esrog. Mishnah Berurah paskins that if you have a better esrog than the one that doesn't have a shoshant on it, it's best to be machmer. Take the, you know, if the other esrog is more mehudar, so then it's better to take that esrog. But if your esrog that's nitla shoshanta is more mehuda than a different esrog with a pitum, then better to take the one that doesn't have a shoshanta, because that's not nitla pitmasa. It's kosher. And if other aspects of the esrog are more mehuda, it's cleaner, as we're going to describe. Mishnah Berurah says that it's better to take the one that's more mehuda. This doesn't change the kashas of the Esrog, if the only thing that fell off is the Shoshanta. Certainly, someone who bought the Esrog in a Cholomoy, the Shoshanta fell off, there's definitely room to be Maker. Definitely room to be Maker. Because it could be Maker Adin, there's no problem. There's one sheet in the Ran, that's Machmer for this, but a Cholomoy, there certainly is room to be Maker. I'll tell you what, there's another reason why a Cholomoy you can be Maker. Because the question is, let's say the Pitim Taka fell off. Completely, meaning with the stem. The pitim fell off in a way that the poskim would say that's called nitla pitmosa. So what kind of a psul is that? It's a machlokas aposkim. Some want to say it's a psul because of chosen. The esrog is missing something. Others say it's psul because of hodor. Pasuk says creates hodor, that the esrog has to be beautiful, and there are certain halachas that define what is hodor. Some want to say if it's nitla pitmosa, it's not called hodor. What's the din after the first day of Yom Tov? Or in Chutzlar is after the second day of Yom Tov? Is Chaser a psul? Is Hadar a psul? So when it comes to Chaser, the Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Vav says the Chaser is only a psul on the first day of Yom Tov. Rabbi Chanina was matul bav and ofik bav. Rabbi Chanina dipped his esrog in some kind of a dip and he took a bite out of the esrog, and then he was yotzei the mitzvah with the esrog. Why did he do that? Probably to teach the Talmidim that even though it's chaser, it's still kosher. He didn't have to eat from the esrog. He could have eaten something else. The stomach was to teach them this din that chaser is kosher on Yom Tov Sheni, which means cholamoy, right? After Yom Tov Rishon. So in Chutzlar, it's actually a shaila in the Rishon, where the Yom Tov Sheni has the din of Yom Tov Rishon for chaser. Sveka Dioma doesn't have the same din as Yom Tov Rishon. But let's just talk about cholamoy. So on cholamoy, certainly if the esrog is chaser, it's kosher. What's the din when it comes to hodar? So that's the machlokas we've shown in Tosis and Daf Chavtes Amid Beis and Sukkah. Says that hodar, the esrog is yovesh, that's pasul kol shiva. Tosis says that hodar is different than chas, it's mucham, it's pasul kol shiva. It's part of the identity of the esrog. Just like there's no question that you need dalet minim throughout chol hamoed, and you need lekicha lechol echad ve'echad, each person has to take a lulav and esrog. There are certain halachas that are fundamental to the mitzvah. So Tosus learns that Hadar is fundamental to the mitzvah. That's how the Esrog is defined in the Pasuk. As opposed to halachas like Choser or Sha'ul, if you borrow the Esrog from someone, so after Yom Tov Rishon, that's okay. The din of Lachem only applies to Yom Tov Rishon. So says Tosus, Hadar is fundamental to the mitzvah, and it's going to pass al kol Shiva is different than Choser. But the Rambam argues, the Rambam in Hilchas Lulav, says that Hadar is the same as Choser, it only passes on the first day, not on the other days. It's Machlokas Machaber Amah. In Simen Tov Reish Mem Tesif Hey had a paskin. Machaber takes the position of the Rambam, and the Rambam is machmer for Tosfos that Hadar is pasul kol shiva. So there are some who pointed out that if nitla pitmasa, the pitim falls off on chol hamoed, you certainly can be megel. Why? Because it could be that nitla pitmasa is only pasul mishum chaser. If it's pasul midin chaser, then everyone says that on chol hamoed that's not going to pass. And even if nitla pitmasa is pasul mishum hadar, according to the Rambam, according to the Mechaber, that doesn't pass after Yom Tov Rishon either. So even Ashkenazim who follow the Ramah, but there's a Svek Sveka here, so there's room to be Mekel on Chol Hamoed for an Esrog that the Pitim fell off. So first of all, most circumstances where the Pitim falls off, the Eitz is still there a little bit. This is a very common case where the ball falls off, but the Eitz is still there, because the ball is very fragile. But the eitz normally is not as fragile as the bull. So in most cases, if somebody has a shaila, the pitim of their esrog fell off, it's probably not going to be a problem to begin with. Me'ikar adin, it's probably kosher. But even if the eitz fell off, and it might be nitla pitmasa, at least on chol hamoed, there is room to be mekel, because it could be that the whole psul is only a psul of chaser anyway, and even if it's a psul of hadar, some claim that after Yom Tov Rishon, there's no psul of hadar anyway. Yes? Right, if it's Zeichel Amigdash, right, it's only Zeichel Amigdash, so even if it's only one suffix, it should be okay, right? The poskim do say, they do mention a Svek Svek, I'm sorry?
Would you make a bracha on that?
I'm saying you could be Mekel Misafek to take it, but would you make a bracha? It's still a suffix bracha. Interesting. So for the suffix bracha, very good. For the suffix bracha, the Svek Svek will help. Maybe Taka, you could even make a bracha. Okay. The Ramah adds that if the Esser grew without a Pithim, so then it's Kushan. So some ask, why would that be Kushan? How can that be Kushan? We only say that if it grows that way, then it's kosher, if we're talking about a psul of hodim. And if it's a psul of choser, missing something from the esrog, I'm sorry, if it's a psul of choser, so then if it grew that way, then it's not choser. But if it's a psul of hodar, missing a pitum is somehow lacking in the esrog, so then just because it grew that way, it's still not hodar. But it shouldn't matter that it grew that way. So someone has suggested that the Ramah l'shitaso, the Ramah holds that nidla pitmaso is only a psul because of choser. That's why he says that if it grew without a pitum, so then there's no reason to pasul. It's a question, because not everyone says that nitla pitmaso is pasul mishum chaser. Some say it's actually pasul mishum chaser. Some are more machmir. But at least the Ramah, who quotes this halacha, that if the yester grew without a pitum, it's kosher, it could be l'shitaso, that the Ramah just holds that nitla pitmaso is pasul mishum chaser, and that's why it's not called chaser if that's the way that it grew. The Mishnah in Sukkah and Daf Lamed Hei says that if also chazazis, so then it depends. If there's a growth on the esrog in certain circumstances, it's kosher. If it's al miyuto, if it's on a minority of the esrog, it's kosher. And if it's al rubo, so then it's possible. What does that mean? So the Gemara explains that if it's on miyuto of the esrog b'makom echad, then it's kosher. But if it's on shnayim or shloshim makomos, if it's in two or three places in the esrog, even though it's on a miyuto of the esrog. Right? It's on a miyut of the esrog. The whole discoloration is only on a small part of the esrog, but it's on it's in shnayim shloshim makomos. Then it's possible. What does it mean shnayim shloshim makomos? Shnayim shloshim makomos. The Gemara says then it's menumer. It's like a spotted esrog, and that's not harder. That's going to be possible. So shnayim shloshim makomos. The Rosh quotes from the Ravid. But that's only if you can draw a line, if you connect the dots in the esrog, then it'll be on most of the shatach of the esrog, most of the surface area. That's what it means on shnayim shloshim makomos. Not just stomp two or three places. It's not going to be on most of the surface area if you connect the dots, as you see in the bottom picture. You know, if it's not going to be on most of the surface area, let's say you had three spots right here, one, two, and three. So that's not most of the surface area. There's a whole other side to the esrog. There's no question that that's not most of the service there. This shita? That's what the Ravid says. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Ravid that it has to be on most of the surface area of the Esrog. The Chazon Ish says that if it's on rove of the hekif of the Esrog, most of the circumference, either this way or the other way, that's not a problem. That's not called rove of the shetach. That's his shita. He could be makel for the Chazon Ish. But if it's like you have the bottom where it's covering most of the surface here of the esrog, if you connect all the dots, so then that's going to be possible. Says the yes. Between the Chazon Ish and this, this is covering most of the shetach. The Chazon Ish is just saying that if it's most of the circumference, that's not most of the surface area. What one could have said that if it's most of the circumference, either vertically or horizontally, so that's called rove. He says, no, rove means rove of the surface area. Rove of the surface area is the bottom. That's not rove of the surface area. There's plenty of esrog in the other, right, in the non-circled areas. It's not rove of the surface area, but it is rove of the circumference of the esrog. Right? Because the circumference of the esrog is from here, whatever. The circumference would be this way, but going from top to bottom, this is rove of that area. So some are actually machmer for that too. The Chazon Ish says there's no reason to be machmer. As long as it's not rove of the surface area, then it's still okay. The Rosh adds that this halacha applies not only to a chazazis, to a growth, but even to black and white. If you have a black spot or a white spot on the esrog, that's also going to pass. Chazazis means like a growth, some kind of a thing growing on the esrog. I have Rav Michil Mechas Stern as pictures of chazazis. I don't have the... I didn't put that picture here.
Like a blister.
It's like a, well, bletlach could be something different, but yeah, it's like a blister type of thing. It looks, chazazis look strange. I think I've seen them once or twice. They just, you know, sometimes when you go to buy a lulav neser, the mochrim show you interesting things that they've collected. So, you know, over the years, you see interesting things. So very interesting things. Very strange things. So the Rosh says that it's not only a chazozis, but if you have a marashach, a maralovon, and rova the eser, so that would also be a problem. The Gemara continues that on the chotem, we're even more machmir. On the chotem, even the mashiru, it doesn't cover rov of the shetach. It's not al rubo. The chotem, even b'mashim. What is the chotem? The top of the yeser. Well, what's the chotem? So, there's a whole range of shitas. The Rambam is probably the most mekel. The Rambam is dalit in the picture. The Rambam says the dafka on the stem of the pitta. Gimel means even the bottom. Below the pitta. The area of the ester that the stem is resting on. The Rambam says only on the stem. Sometimes you see there are some black dots on that stem if you look very carefully. The Rambam says that's the chotem. So then even b'mashu, if you have a black dot there, would be a problem. If you have a white dot, let's say, that would be a problem. The Rosh says that the chotem is not only that area, but the entire incline, bathe, the entire incline of the ester, where it starts to go toward the pitta. The Rosh is more machmir than the Rambam. The Rosh would say that the shipuah, the entire shipuah is called the chotem. And if you have a white dot on that area, that would possibly answer. The Chasam Sofer is chidushim on Sukkah. He says that the Mori Horoah follow the Rosh. They're machmir for the Rosh. And the chotem is the area of the incline where the esrog starts to go toward the pit. The Magen Avraham quotes from the Mabit that Chazazis and any other Shinui Mara only passes if it's nikar la'ayin, if it's recognizable when you hold the esrog in your hand. That's what the Mabit says. The Taka makes a lot of sense, because the rule of the chotem, why are we machmir for a mashu of a shinui mara in a chotem? That's because it's more recognizable than the rest of the esrog. So if that's the whole reason why shinui mara is a problem, so then it's mistaber that it's only a problem if you can see the difference. You know, to take a magnifying glass and look at the esrog and try to figure out, you know, do you see the spots, do you not see the spots, it's not mistaber that you should have to do that if the whole purpose of being machmer in the chotem is because it's more recognizable. So why do people take the magnifying glass? I thought that maybe the reason is because the people looking are older rabbanim, and they're afraid that their eyes are not as good as they used to be. So maybe we don't follow the eyes of the individual who's looking. Now, even though the phrase is ein l'dayin ala masha ein of Roos, it means that if his eyes were really good, this is what he would see. I mean, we're talking about not just talking about judgment, we're talking about actually seeing with your eyes. So maybe the Dayanim feel that they're not looking so well anymore. They need glasses, and it's hard for them to read, so they're not seeing so carefully. They need a different pair of glasses for the reading. So maybe they feel that, of course we follow the eyesight, but the eyesight of Rov B'nei Adam, not the eyesight of someone who has difficulty seeing. So maybe that's why they feel that it's good to be machmer in order to be able to see with the magnifying glass exactly what it is. Is it a black spot? Is it a brown dot? Brown dots are not a shinui mara. Only the black dots. Only a black spot would be considered a shinui mara. The other reason they use a magnifying glass is to see whether it's chaser. For chaser, we might not follow a person's vision. We might follow mitzias. So to know whether the thing is chaser or not, you have to look carefully. So maybe that's why they have the magnifying glass. But from looking for the chaser, you know, it got nishtarbe, but even looking at the color, you know, at the dots and the shinui mara, they use the magnifying glass as well. The pshuto, you really don't have to if you're a young person and your vision is good. If you have 20/20 or you have a pair of glasses and you can see just fine, so then you don't have to use a magnifying glass. Rabbi Schechter, I think, never uses a magnifying glass. He feels b'shita, that's not what should be done. So I think he looks at the esrog, he looks at arm's length at the esrog, and he judges based on that what he can see. Yes? I don't think Rabbi Schechter doesn't look at the esrog like that. He looks at an esrog in the normal way that you would look at an esrog. You know, most people, when they look at an esrog, they don't look like this. They look at arm's length. So that's called holding the esrog in your hand. So that's what you're mechuyev to do. Anything that you do more than that, that's a chumrah. So even if you'll do that, but you should realize that it's only a chumrah. Bletlich. Bletlich are the scabs that you find on an esrog. Like this. Bottom of the esrog. How does the esrog develop bletlich? So the experts will tell you that that's where a thorn touched the esrog and then it healed. It's like a scab, exactly. Pshuto kemashmo. When a person gets a cut, that means a thorn touched them or they scratched themselves or something, and then a scab develops on the skin. So the same way the scab develops on the esrog. What's the din of bletlich in an esrog? So my focus on the poskim. Some poskim hold that it's not Mara Esser. That's the Maril's sheet, that it's not Mara Esser. It has a din of a chazazis. The Trumas Hadeshin is Machshir. He says that he thinks it is Mara Esrig, and it should be kosher, and that's how the Ramah passes. That Bled Lecha Mara Esrig, and they don't pass on the Esrig, even if they're in two or three places in the Esrig. Rov Shetach of the Esrig. If you Bled Lecha in three different areas, and if you connect the dots, that's going to be most of the surface area of the Esrig, it's still kosher according to the Trumas Hadeshin and the Ramah. That's important to keep in mind. Right? Even if it's below the Chotem, even if it's below the chodim is not rove of the esrog, and you have buletlach all along the bottom of the esrog, that would cover rove of the surface area of the esrog, that could passel according to some shita, according to the Ramah, the way that we paskin, it doesn't passel. The esrog is still kosher. So that's why many poskim, dayanim, who look at esrogim, they don't really look at the bottom too much. It doesn't bother them. As long as the chodim is clear, that's fine. And even if there's a buletl on the chodim, it doesn't passel, but you know, it's not as chodr, it's not as mahudr, I should say. It's not as mahudr as something that's completely clean. How about black dots? So according to the Trumas Hadeshin, if blet lech kosher because it's mara esrog, then the stomach black dots also should be mara esrog. I know the Rosh says that shochar is a shini mara, but maybe the Rosh is only talking about a black spot? Now, if you have a black spot this size, that's not a Mara Esser. That's different. Right? That's these big circles. Black spot. That's significant. That's not Mara Esser. That's not so normal to see on an Esser. But black dots. Every year we see black dots. Right? Someone has an Esser with black dots, so he normally rejects it. They try to find something without black dots. But the Pshuto, even black dots, shouldn't really be a problem. Rabbi Shechter likes to quote from the Chaim of Brocha that the only type of black dot that should be a problem is if it's black machmas ipush because of decay. That's a shini mara. But the black dots that we see on esrogim, that's not a shini mara. That's not because of decay. That's the way the esrog grew. So he doesn't think that should really be a problem. That's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Bikur Yaakov, that only shachar machmas ipush is defined as a shini mara. But any other shachar is not. Look, the fact is the poskim machmas, they try very hard. If you show an esrog, if there's a black dot, they'll tell you to take another one. Me'ikir adin, it might not be a problem, but there's room to be machmer if you can find a better esrog. It's better to find something without black dots. Brown dots don't pass the bechal. According to anyone, they don't pass. That's mara esrog. It's only a light brown dot. That's okay. It's best to have an esrog that's clean on the chotem completely, but you'll pay a pretty hefty sum for such an esrog. So if you have one or two brown dots, small brown dots, that you know you have to show someone for them to see, that's probably 100% kosher. It's not only kosher, it's probably mehuder, not so recognizable. That's probably fine. You can get an esrog that's naki lagami, that's completely clean. Be jealous of you. Now, if you can get an esrog that's completely clean, so that's certainly the best thing to do, but you're going to have to pay a lot of money, so I'm not sure that you're mechuyev to do that. Brown dots don't passel. Black dots might passel, they might not passel, but brown dots certainly are considered Mara Esser, and they're not going to passel. Yes?
These black dots are only going to passel if they're like in that picture, if they're right in the shetach?
If they're on the chotem, even b'mashu.
Oh, even
the chotem. Chotem, even b'mashu. But if they're black dots on the bottom, then even if you assume that they passel, it's only going to be if they're on robe of the shetach of the Esser. What's the din of green on an Esser? Green dots, or green discoloration, or maybe the Esser entirely is green. So the Tanaim of a Machlokis in the Mishnah in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Daled, where the Yorah Kekarti is kosher or not. And we pass them that it's possum, that Yorah Kekarti is possum. Tosis there quotes from the Yerushalmi that there's only Yorah Keisvei HaSodeh. Yorah Kekarti, leek, green like a leek. It's not this part of the leek, it's this part of the leek. Very green, Keisvei HaSodeh, like grass. Most of us are not going to see an Esrog that's this green. That's what Tosis says, that from the Yerushalmi, only if it's Yorah Keisvei HaSodeh is it going to be possible. What's the reason for the Psul? So the Achronim have a debate. The Mishnah Berurah quotes this in Siman Tov Resh Mem Pesach Katan Samach He, in the Sharetzi in there. The Bach holds that Yorah Kekarti is possible because it's a Shinui Mara. It's a Shinui Mara. An Esrog is supposed to be yellow. Yorah Kekarti is a Shinui Mara. The Magen Avraham holds that Yorah Kekarti is possible because it's lo nigmar peira. It means that the esrog is not fully ripe. Not because of the shini mara, not fully ripe. The nafkamina between these two shitas is, let's say the esrog is going to change color. It's going to turn yellow. You cut it off the tree, but you know from experience that it's going to, you're an expert, you know from experience it's going to turn colors. You know, some people, they know they put it with certain apples and they can turn it. I don't recommend doing that because sometimes it takes the pit, you know, the pitum falls off as a result. You know, there's some kind of chemical interaction that occurs between the apples and the estrogen, and it makes it turn yellow. So if you know that even though the estrogen is completely green, but it's going to turn yellow, so according to the Magen Avraham, it should be kosher because it's not a shinyan ara. The whole problem is that it's not ripe, but this is ripe. If it ultimately is going to turn yellow, so then that shows that it is ripe. If it weren't ripe, then it wouldn't be able to turn yellow anymore. According to the Bach, that it's a shinyan ara, then that's going to be a problem. So Zok the Mishnah Berurah, even according to the Magen Avraham, you shouldn't be mekel unless it starts to turn yellow. Don't take an esrog that's completely green. Even if you know, with your expertise, that it's going to turn yellow, you still shouldn't take it. Now, if you take it only when it starts to turn yellow. According to the Bach, even if it starts to turn yellow, it's still a problem, because the green that's left is still going to be a shinyan ara. So how do we paskin l'maisa? It's a big machlokas in the achronim, right? So how do we paskin? So rov achronim amekel when it comes to green. Mishtabura the chazanish, many amekel for the Magen Avraham, that the problem of green is that it's not going to, that it's not ripe. So if it's maschel lahatziv, if it's partially green, partially yellow, you see it's already started to turn colors, so then that is viewed as a ripened esrog. So that would be kosher, according to most chitas. It's a big kula, because many esrogim have a little bit of green. Sometimes they even have a little bit of green on the chotem. But just because it's green on the chotem, if it's yellow, according to the Magen Avraham, that's kosher v'yosher. It's 100%. The Bikur Yaakov says that a bal nefesh should be machmer for the bach. Bal nefesh, well, what does that mean? Bal nefesh. If you can, you should be machmer for the bach that green is a shinyan ara. That's no gael l'maisa. If green is a shinyan ara, then on the chotem, even a mashu of green is going to be a problem. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, in his Chut HaMshula, she has a tshuva, which they attribute not to him, but to the Mishnah Yaakov, actually. The different rayas that the experts have, that it's not Reb Chaim Volozhiner who wrote this tshuva, it's rather the Mishnah Yaakov. So he wants to say that an esrog hayorok, that a green esrog is possible. But Reb Shechter is very machmer on this. He holds that green esrog is possible. But you shouldn't take it. He's machmer for the Bach. He assumes that it is a shinyan ara, like the Reb Chaim Volozhiner, like the Mishnah. The problem is, they point out that many of the pictures that you put in the sukkahs that have the gedolim taking a little bit of esrog, they're taking green esrogim. So what exactly is going on over here? So the answer that's given is that dafka yoro kakarti is possible. If it's very green, that's a problem. But if you look at the pictures, they're green esrogim, but they're not so green. They're as green as this esrog. I don't think so. So if they're not so green, so then it's kosher. That's not green according to anyone. Even according to the Bach, that wouldn't be called green. But if it's only green like this, like the lighter part of the green of the leek, of the karti, that's not a problem. It has to be a dark green. Someone to say that's why the gedolim are mekel. They can't get yellow esrogim, I guess. They can't get clean yellow esrogim. So they take something that's a little bit greenish. Something that's a little bit greenish. Because they say that that's not considered green at all. Or maybe they're mekel against the Bach. They're mekel against the Bach, then it's not a problem. Some of the Hasidim have pointed out that it's an inyan to take a green esrog. After all, the Zohar says that an esrog is supposed to be yorok. Except the Mishnah Yaakov says, what do you mean? Yorok in Chazal doesn't mean green, it means yellow. This is machlokas, what the word yorok means. I don't know. There are different approaches. There are many who are mekel to take an esrog that has a little bit of green on it. Yes?
Isn't if people, like the Dolim or anyone else are taking a light green esrog,
no, they claim that there's no green on the esrog at all. There's no dark green. It's all lightish green. It doesn't even have to be as light as this. It can be a little bit darker than this. As long as it's not as green as the isfe hasada, as the grass, so then that's not called green at all. It's not that it started to change yellow. It's completely yellow. Because as long as it's not as green as grass, that's not called green. Okay? Which is better on the esrog? If you want to look for an esrog hamahuda, that's what everyone's looking for, right? So what's better? That it should be completely clean on the chotem, or that it should be symmetrical, that the giddle should be nice? So if you were to ask me, I'd say that the giddle, being symmetrical, is more important. Why? Because we said that the whole idea of hiddur is a function of a person's perspective. So it's much easier to see an esrog that looks like a banana right? To see an Esser that is not symmetrical than to see the little dots on the top of the Chotem. Yeah, people have to look very carefully to see those dots, to see a discoloration. So it would seem as though the Pshuto symmetry is more important. You have an Esser with a nice Giddel, that Taka looks nice. The Poskim somehow don't assume like that, because most Poskim don't care about the symmetry at all. They care whether it's clean. They're concerned about all the dots, even the brown dots. Again, the brown dots are kosher. They're not going to passel the Esrit. They'll paskin it's kosher, but they'll say better to take another one if you want a mehudadik Esrit. So even though that's not what the poskim, it's more mistaber, it would seem, that if the giddel is nice, then that's better than having something that's clean, but the giddel really is not nice. But that, the reality is most of the Morei Horah care only about the cleanliness of the Esrit. I'll just tell you, that's just the way it is. They care about the cleanliness of the Esrit on the Chotem. That's really what they're looking for. Rabbi Simon likes to tell a story that Rabbi Willig says about himself, that the way he looks for an Esrit is he takes a bunch of Esrogim, 20, 30 Esrogim, looks through them, he picks the four or five best, and then he shows them to his wife, and his wife is the one who picks out the Esrit that he actually takes for the mitzvah. Why? Because hither is a function of aesthetic beauty, and he feels his wife has a better eye for the aesthetic beauty of the Esrit. So he wants to, you know, give her a group of Esrogim to choose from. He looks at the halacha and tries to figure out halachically which one is in the running. But then to actually make that decision for the aesthetic beauty, he deigns to his wife. So, you know, everyone can decide for themselves, you know, whose perspective of aesthetic beauty carries the day. But I think aesthetic beauty does play a role. It definitely does play a role. I would say, even if you want to be careful about the cleanliness, you should look for the symmetry too. I think that adds to the hider of the Esrog, and it's certainly nicer to take an Esrog that is a bit more symmetrical. Yes?
Is it starting with the Gartlach?
Gartel.
Symmetrically
nicer? I don't know. A Gartel, I don't have a picture of a Gartel. A Gartel, an Esrog with a Gartel sort of has like a form.
Is it? It has the Chotem on the top with the Pitam, right? And then somehow it's indented, and then it comes out a little bit again. That's a
gartel. And I often say that if you wear a gartel for davening, then you should, you know, maybe be makbid on a gartel for an eser. You don't wear a gartel. What's the idea of having a gartel in the eser? I think the first picture we gave is the classical example, classical picture of an eser. That's what an eser should look like. Ah, we should all be zochen to get such an eser for a decent price. You know, it has the blitos, it has the proper giddel. The poskim don't mention anything about a gartel, even though that's what the mochim. You know, sometimes, if you see an eser with a gartel, say, "Oh, an eser with a gartel." Just because they say it doesn't mean that it's in the poskim. I have to see it. Some chassidish poskim look at that. They say, "Oh, that is a hitter." I don't know. I don't know what the mocher of that is, but I don't think that a person who's not chassidish has to be machna for a gartel. Okay, what's the din of a lulav? What are some of the halachas we're looking for in a lulav? So, first of all, the lulav should be fresh. That means it should be green. It shouldn't be turning white. It shouldn't be drying up. To get a lulav that's yovish mamish, that it's posel, it's very rare. You know, it's not going to get yovish until, you know, chodesh shvat or something. But there are differences. You know, there are some lulavim that are turning white. That's not as fresh. Certainly, it's not a hiddur. It's not the best lulav. And it should be shakeable also. Nanuim is part of the mitzvah, so the lulav should be shakeable. The lulav is not so shakeable. That's also not so nice. What are the psulim of a lulav? So perhaps the most famous psul is called nechleka hatiyomis, if the tiyomis is split. What is the tiyomis? Just one second. It's a machlokus in the mefarshim, machlokus rishonim, what a tiyomis is. The Rif and the Rambam hold that every leaf of the lulav, we know is made of a twin leaf, it's really a double leaf, so they hold that the tiyomis is the point where the two parts of the leaf join together. In all of the olim of the lulav, all the leaves of the lulav, each one is called a tiyomis. So nechleka hatiyomis would mean that if in rove of the leaves of the lulav, the double leaf is split. Roll over the leaves of the lulav, the double leaf is split. That's very rare. That's what the Rif and the Rambam hold. The Rosh quotes from the Gaonim, and others quote from Rashi, that Nechleka HaTiomis means that the middle leaf is split. The Tiomis is only the very middle leaf of the lulav. It's hard to see, but maybe you can see them. Right, the middle leaf of the lulav, after the Shedra ends, when the spine ends, so then there's one leaf that goes up. Sometimes there are two Tiomisim, there are two, but let's talk about the case of one. So it goes up. If it's split, here, the double leaf is split, so then the lulav is pasul. So how do we paskin? Like the Rif and the Rambam, or like Rashi and the Gaonim? So it's the machlokas. The machaber is mekel for the Rif and the Rambam. So Sfardim, I imagine the Sfardim don't really look so carefully at the lulavim, at the top of the lulav when they buy them, because it's very rare that rove of the leaves of the lulav are split. Is there a Sfardim here? Are you machmer for this? No. Yeah, they don't look at it because they follow the Rif and the Rambam. So there's nothing to, you know, they spend time on the Esrog, and the Lulav is an easy acquisition for them. But the Ashkenazim work much harder because they're machmer for the Ramam. They assume that the Tiomis is the middle leaf. If that is split, then it could be possible. How much has to be split in order to be possible? So the Ritva in Sukkah says that it has to be Nechlat Berubo. Rove of the leaf until the Shedra. Rubo Kekulo. So if it's Nechlat Berubo, then it's going to be a problem. The Ran quotes the Yesh Omrin, that even if it's nechlaka b'miyuto, it's also a problem. Even if it's only split a little bit. What does it mean, a little bit? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes in the Chaye Adam that according to this Shita, you have to be machmer that even if it's nechlaka b'mashehu, a mashehu, that's going to be a problem. Now, why is that? Why does Chaye Adam say even nechlaka hatyomis b'mashehu should be a problem? So Mestami holds that nechlaka hatyomis is possible because it's chaser, it's not a lakichatama. If it's not a lekicha tama, then even b'mashu, it's not tama. It's not complete. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't explain that way. The Mishnah Berurah says that the problem is if it's split even a little bit, we're afraid that through the nanuim, it's going to get split rov. It sounds like it's a chashash d'rabbana. It's not me'ikar adin. It's just the chumra d'rabbana. Interesting. But that's the chumra of the Chaya Adam, that even if the tiyomus is split a little bit, it's going to be possible. Says the Rama, the mitzvah min amulchus, to try to take a lulav that's not split at all in order to be machmer for that yeshomrim in the Ran. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Gra that you don't have to be machmer for such a thing. As long as it's not split perubo, it's lechatchila kashim. You don't have to be machmer for the chumrah of the chayadim. Of course, even according to the Mishnah Berurah, if you have another lulav, if you have a lulav that's if you have two lulavim in front of you, one is not split and the other one is split, so obviously take the one that's not split. But the Mishnah Berurah says that if the only lulav you can get is split b'mashu, it's still kashim. The Vilna Gaon says lechatchila it's kashim. People are crazy over this. It's good to try to get a lulav. You know, now they have a deri, they have deri lulav. Deri lulavim for some reason have a stronger consistency. So the Tiomasin are able to survive much more than the old lulav. It just happens to be that if you look at a dairy lulav, it's much easier to find a lulav that does not have a split tiomas. So it's easier. The problem is that the dairy lulav are expensive. I'm not sure that you're mechuyev to buy it. If you can find a lulav that's only split b'mashu, then according to the Mishnah Berurah, that's lechatchila kasha. Some of the poskim point out that there might be a different problem with the split tiomas. That is that the Gemara in Sukkah on the Flamed Bay says that if it's Ovid Kehemnik, if it's like a fork, Ovid Kehemnik, so then it's possible even if it's Nechlaka only b'maktsasa. That's like this. That the Tiomis is coming apart. The Ben Chananel on the side of the Gemara in Sukkah has a picture like a U almost. If it's Ovi Kehemnik, even if it's only a Mashahu, the Gemara says that that's a problem. What does Ovi Kehemnik mean? So I just said Ovi Kehemnik B'mashu. That's not what the post can mean when they say Ovi Kehemnik B'mashu. What I meant is that even if the Tiomis goes down to the Shedra till here, so that's not B'mashu, that's just B'miyuto. So Ovi Kehemnik B'miyuto, the pshuto should be right. So the chiddush is that even if it's ovik kehemnik b'miyuto, that's a problem. Comes the levushei srod on the taz and says even ovik kehemnik b'mashu is a problem. Even b'mashu, that's going to be a problem. And he adds, and you should know, al pi rov, if the tiomas is split, it's nasa kehenek. That's the end of the levushei sretz kam. So other poskim say, it's poshut not true. It's always ovid kehenek. I mean, so why does the Gemara talk about nechleka hatiomas? It should just say that every nechleka hatiomas is ovid kehenek. It sounds like ovid kehenek is something different. The Marsham suggests that ovid kehenek is only going to be a problem if it's like the Rabbi Nachmanel's picture. Meaning, if even when you look at the lulav, right, you look at the lulav without fiddling with it on top, you put it down on the table, or you're looking at it without fiddling at the tiomas, you see that the two parts of the tiomas are actually separated from each other. And sometimes if you look at a lulav, you'll see that the two parts are really coming up separately. So according to some, that's still not a problem. Right? It's not a problem because you can't... you know, it's only b'miyuto, and it's not significant enough. It really has to be like a fork. But even if you'll be machmir, that b'mashu is a problem, b'mashu doesn't necessarily mean literally b'mashu. It means that if it's recognizable, even if you put the lulav down, right, if the parts of the tiyomis are smuchim zelazeh, the Marsham would say that's not a problem. If you only see that it's nechleka by fiddling with the tiomis, and you should be careful not to do it too much because you'll break the tiomis, you'll separate it even more. Right? If you only see that the tiomis is split when you touch it, so then that might not be called ovid kehemnik. It's only ovid kehemnik if it's recognizable that the two parts of the tiomis are actually separated from each other. Another issue with the lulav is sometimes the top of the lulav is covered with what's called kara. Just one moment, please. Kara. That's the brown stuff on top of the lulav. On the very top, you have a little bit of kara. So it's best not to take a lulav with kara because you don't really know if the tiomas is split. You can't see the tiomas. If you take off the kara, so you might split the tiomas. So that's not fair either to the mocher. Then you can't sell the lulav to anyone else. It's better not to take such a lulav. First of all, you don't know if the tiomas is split. And secondly, you're not going to be able to shake the lulav properly. You can't shake the lulav because the kara keeps the leaves of the lulav together. It's best not to take such a lulav. Okay. What's the din of a lulav okum? Or kafuf. Let's say the lulav is bent. So the halacha is that if the lulav is bent, okum, hamish bent over, so the Gemara says that if it's doma lemagal, it's pasul. It's like a sickle. It's quite bent. If it's doma lemagal, then it's pasul. And how? The Gemara qualifies it that only if it's doma lemagal, if it's bent toward the sides. Right? It's bent toward the sides or toward the front. But if it's bent backwards, meaning if you're holding the lulav with the shedra facing you, and the lulav is bent backwards, even if it's doma lemagal, it's kosher. Might not be lechatchila, might not be mahuder, but it's kosher. But if it's doma lemagal, bent the other way, or to the stud into the sides, then that's going to be a problem. How about a lulav kofuf? Okum is not so common. Sometimes you'll find a lulav okum that's bent backwards towards you, away from, you know, toward the shedra, toward the individual when he's holding the lulav toward him, with the shedra facing him. So that's kosher. It really is kosher. If the lulav, the tiomis isn't split at all, but it's a little bit bent toward the other side, that's not a problem. It's very rare that you'll see doma lemagal. How about a lulav kafuf, a bent lulav? That means just the top is bent. What is that? Is that okay? Is that not okay? That we have over here. So the Rishonim have a debate. What happens if you only have, if only the middle leaf is bent, towards the middle is bent, but not rove of the leaves. Rove of the leaves are not bent. So the Rosh in the Tshuva says that kfifas harosh is not called kofuf. Kofuf, a little kofuf means that most of the leaves are bent. Like this. It's a little hard to see. You see all the leaves are sort of bent together. So that's kofuf, that's possible. It's not okum, the whole lulav is in okum, but the olim are kfuf and the olim are bent. But something like this, where only the middle leaf is bent and then the rest of them are perfectly straight, according to the Rosh, that's kosher. And the Rosh says, and I think it's better to take such a lulav. because there's less of a likelihood that the tiyomus is going to be split. When it's bent over, then the tiyomus doesn't split, because the bending protects the tiyomus. But again, the rush would only be machshir if the middle leaf is bent, not if all the leaves on top would be bent. Comes the Ran and says no, that even if the middle leaf is bent, it's a problem. This is what's called a kneppel. The Rush likes the kneppel. Many Hasidim like the kneppel. Most Litvisha people avoid the kneppel because they're machmer to the Ran. The Ran holds that even if it's kofof in the middle leaf, that's a problem. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rush, but the Mishnah Berurah says that it quotes the Ran to be machmer. So many are machmer for the Ran, that you shouldn't take a lulav with a kneppel, even if only the middle leaf is bent and not most of the leaves. The Chaim of Rocha, which is a compendium on Hilchos Lulav and Esrog, he says that a lulav mehudar should be completely straight. Completely straight. That's why some people will do what they call a machine gun test. You know, they like put the lulav out this way to see if it's perfectly straight. Put it this way. They want to see that it's perfectly straight to be machmer for this shita. The Torah's Dalad Minim, Rav Schneebalg, in Chelik Beis, he writes that the Chazanish wasn't makbid on this. He was not makbid that the lulav should be perfectly straight. He said that Okom Kemagal Ksiv, it says that if it's Kemagal, it's a problem. If it's not Kemagal, it's not a problem. So he felt it's not even a hider. But others were machmer, the Stiper and the Briskirav, they were machmer to try to take a lulav that's perfectly straight. So it is a hider that many people try to be machmer to try to take a lulav that's straight. It's a lot easier now to find such a lulav. You know, to find a lulav that's not split at all and is perfectly straight, that's a challenge. But nowadays, Baruch Hashem, we have a bigger supply, and it's easier to find the lulav that both haka could be not split even in mashahu, and it'll be straight. It's possible to find such a lulav. The person should try. He should try to be mishtadel. But if he can't, he should know exactly what is kosher and what is not kosher. He can't say something is posel if it's not posel. Okay, what's the shear of a hadas? What's the length of a hadas? So the Gemara says that a hadas has to be gimel tfachim. Three tfachim. How much is it? Tafach machlokas? So anywhere from a little bit less than 10 inches to, according to the Chazon Ish, 11 and a half inches. Basically around that gamut. Okay, if you have 11 and a half inches, that's according to the Chazon Ish. You have gimel tfachim even according to the Chazon Ish. How do we measure these gimel tefachim? So, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Ritva in Sukkah that we measure the gimel tefachim only in the stem, not in the leaves on top of the hadas. If you look at the hadas carefully, you'll see that at a certain point it doesn't have any stem. There are leaves that come out of the top. So the Mishnah Berurah says that doesn't count. We don't count the stem. We don't count the leaves that don't have stem. Only the leaves that are coming out with the stem. And how about on the bottom of the hadas? The stem on the bottom. Let's say the leaves start 2 inches above from the bottom of the hadas. We count the stem on the bottom for the shear of the gimel tefachim. So that's a shaila. With Yisrael Yaakov Fisher, in his Haskoma to the Sefer Dalad Minim HaSholem, which was the original Dalad Minim Sefer, so he thought that maybe since it's normal to have stem between the leaves, it's part of the Hadas, so maybe the stem on the bottom should also be able to count. He counts stem, so maybe on the bottom it will count too. That's his suffix, he wasn't sure. The Chazon Ish said, the Chazon Ish writes actually, it's in a Kuf Mem Vav Oschez, he says that the shear for the Hadas starts from the first grouping of leaves. Goes from the first grouping of leaves in the stem until the end of the stem. That's the shear of the hadas. It has to be gimel tefachim. According to the Chazon Ish, it would have to be 11 and a half inches from the first grouping of the leaves until the end of the stem of the top. We know that because the pasuk says anaf eitz avos, that the hadas is called anaf eitz avos, it has to be mishulash avos. It's supposed to be in triplicate, to have at least three leaves from each spot. It can have more than three, but it shouldn't have less than three. Less than three, then it's a hadas shota. What does it mean, mishulash? So Rashi has a chumra. Rashi assumes that mishulash means that the three leaves come out of exactly the same spot. Tosis in the Rosh says that this is a chumra yaseira. It's not necessary to be nachme for that. As long as they're smuchim udvukim zebazeh, they're close to each other, the leaves are close to each other, They don't have to come out of Kain Echad, as they call it, out of one spot. What does that mean, Smuchim Udbukim Zebazes? So the Chazon Ish has a famous comment here that as long as you have a line, as long as you can connect the stems of the leaves of the Hadas, then that's kosher. What does it mean to connect the stems? So Rabbi Yechiel Michal Stern says that he was mevar by Reb Chaim Greinemann, who was a relative of the Chazon Ish, right, his nephew. So he said that, you know, each leaf of the Hadas has like a little stem that's coming out of the big stem. There's a little area where it comes out. So if the stems of the different leaves of the Hadas don't join at all, meaning you can't draw a line and it'll go through all the stems, then that's kosher. Here it's perfect, right? Starts maschal v'shav, as it says. So this is perfect. But even if it's not so perfect, that the little stem, the little, I'm not sure what to call it, but the little area that the leaf comes out of, and that's attached to the big stem of the hadas, even if it doesn't start exactly v'shav, they're not starting v'shav, but you can draw a line around the hadas and you'll be able to join all of those mini stems, then that's kosher according to Tosis and the Rosh. Point to Rashi, the imamish have to be coming out of the same place, literally from the same area. That's a chumri yaseir. You don't have to be machmir for that. But people will check hadasim to look to see if the three leaves really are if there's a kav nifkash, as they call it. If you can have a line that's going to meet all three, if you draw a line around the hadas. And if it doesn't, then they assume that's called a hadashoda because you don't have three leaves coming out of the same area. It doesn't have to come out of the same spot, but it has to come out of the same area. What's the halacha if some of the leaves of the hadas fall off? It's a big machlokas in the Rishonim, the Gaonim. Tur quotes from the Gaonim that you need avos in the entire shear of the hadas. It has to be mishulosh in the entire shear of the hadas. Even if in one spot you only have two leaves and not three, the hadas is posel. That's one extreme. The Rambam is the other extreme. He says that as long as you have one grouping of three leaves left, then the hadas is kosher. And we pass it in the middle, we pass it like the Ravid. The Rosh quotes from the Ravid, the Shita, that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that Me'ikra din le'mitzvah, you need kula meshulash, but b'di'eved, if you have rov meshulash is fine. If you have rov meshulash of the shear of the hadas, then that's kosher. So the shear of the hadas is 11 and a half inches, let's say, if you take the Chazon Ish. Right? The shear is gimel tvachim, so you have rov of that, meshulash, to figure out what rov is, so then that's going to be kosher. Do you need a rov meshulash consecutive? So the poskim say no. It's not necessary to have rov consecutive as long as in that area. Right? 11 and a half. Take a majority of what 11 and a half is. I don't know exactly what it comes out to. A little bit less than 6 inches, whatever. So if you have a rov meshulash of the 11 and a half inches of the hadas, then b'dieved, that's okay. It's best to try to get kula meshulash if you can. But if you have rov meshulash, then that would be okay as well. So the best thing to do, I mean, now we don't check hadasim too much. It used to be that you checked hadasim. Now everything comes prepackaged. Even a deri lulo comes prepackaged. So you might ask yourself, what do we need the shear for? Just, you know. But you have to know what you're looking at. Sometimes the things in the packages, they're not kosher. Not mishposel. Even though they're packaged, I don't know who packaged them. You have to still know what you're looking for. But with the hadasim, the best is to try to get the aleph, you know, get the Chazon Ish, get the best you can get. And if you can look through the package a little bit to see if it's really meshulish properly, then matov. But if you get the aleph aleph mistam, it'll at least be ruba meshulish. If it says kula meshulish on it, chazon ish mistam, it'll be at least ruba meshulish, and the end will be kasher. Yes.
With mishitas arrive, the minority that are allowed to not be meshulish, do they have to have at least two? Could they have one leaf still?
So lachar according to the arrive, even if they don't have two, it's not meshulish anyway. Of course, it's appropriate to get hadasim that are not serrated, you know, that don't have serrated edges on them, that the olim are elongated appropriately. Obviously, that's, you know, to get a rounded hadas, to get hadas with rounded leaves, that's not good. The leaves should be elongated. That's another siman of a hadas, and they should not be serrated. They shouldn't be jagged. The Gemara in Sukkah Daf Lamed Gimel says that because the pasuk says the arve nachal, we learn that the arovos have to be gedelim al hanachal. But shalbal v'shalharim minai, how do I know that you can take arovos even if they don't come from a watered area, they're not coming from a place with water? So arve nachal, the arve, the plural lashon of arve tells me arve nachal mikol makom, that even if the arovos don't come from a nachal, it's kosher. From Rashi and the Gemara, it sounds like lechatchila lemitzvah, the arava should come from a nachal. Should come near a nachal. But the minig is not like that. The Rosh says the minig is that we take aravas even if they don't grow from a nachal. People often just plant aravas in their backyard. And that's okay lechatchila. You don't have to worry for the shittas Rashi. What are the simonim of the arava? So the Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Aleph says there are three simonim. First of all, that its stem is red. And secondly, that the leaf is elongated, it's mashuch. And thirdly, that the leaf is smooth, it has a smooth edge, it's not jagged, it's not serrated, just like the hamas. These are the three simanim of the arava. The Ramah, in Siman Tov Resh Mem Zayin, Sif Aleph, quotes on the Beis Yosef, that even if the stem is not red, it's still kosher. All the Gemara was saying is that if the stem is not red, meaning it's white, then it's a tzavtzafa. That's an arava psula. But if it's green, which many arava saw, even if they're not red, I've never seen an arava with a white stem. If the arava has a green stem, that's also kosher. Doesn't have to be red dafta. That's what the Beis Yosef says. If you can get aravas with a red stem, matov, that's better. But if it's green, it still would be kosher. The Mishnah Berurah adds that niktam rosha, if the arava is cut off on top, it's pasul. If most of the leaves are dried, or if most of the leaves fell off, that's also pasul. The Magen Avraham writes that lechatchila one should be careful that even one leaf of the arava shouldn't fall off. Make sure that the arava has all of the leaves there. So therefore you should be careful when you stick the aravas into the koshikol. Be careful that you're not going to take off the leaves. You're going to spend so much time looking for the hadassim and the aravas, and then you'll stick them in the koshikol and you'll pasul them, or you'll at least make them not lechatchila. So what was the purpose of the investment of time? Some of the doctors can take an arava that has what's called a lavluv. A lavluv is the little flower that comes on top of the arava. What's the purpose of the flower that's from the top? They say the chumrah is that shows that it's not nikdam rosha, that the top is not cut off, because if it's cut off, it can't have that little flower growing from the top. Some of the makbid to try to take an arava dafka with the lavluv. How much does one have to spend for Dalad Minim? So we know the Gemara in Bava Kama talks about Hidda Mitzvah, the Shir of Hidda Mitzvah. The Gemara says that Hidda Mitzvah is Ad Shlish B'Mitzvah. That you have to be Mahadir Mitzvah until a third of the Mitzvah. Shlish Melagav, Shlish Melabar. Question how to estimate it. Let's assume it's Shlish Melagav, which means more. That means out of the whole sum. Alright, so let's say Lulav of an Esrig costs $50, let's say, for argument's sake. So Shlish Melagav would mean that you have to be willing to spend...
30.
I'm sorry? Okay, let's do 30, right. So if it's 30, so Shlish Melagav would mean really a half. That means to be willing to spend $15 more. So that after you have the full sum, 45, so then the 15 is a third of the entire amount. So, Be'emis, how much do you have to spend to get a lulav and esrog that's kosher, to get a kosher set? Probably not much more than $30, I would imagine. Like 30, 40, maybe it's getting a little more expensive now. So to spend $100 on a set of dalad minim, the chara person is not mechuyav to do that, because it's more than shlish b'mitzvah. You have to spend shlish b'mitzvah. So if the lulav and esrog, the kosher set costs $30, then you don't have to spend more than $45 on a set for hidden mitzvah. I'm not sure what a kosher set costs, but let's assume you can get a kosher set for 30, then you shouldn't have to spend more than 45. Aye, but there are many people who spend more, so why do they do that? The answer is that a person can be mevazbez, he can spend a little bit more. It's not about kashchis. If a person spends more money on other luxuries in life, on other gashmias, then it's not inappropriate to spend a little bit more for the mitzvah too. But there's a limit. A person doesn't have to overdo it. But there is an inyan to spend a little bit more if you can afford it, and you do spend more on other things, then it is appropriate for a person to spend more for a set of dalad minim. We paskin that dvar Torah mos konos, but midrabbanan mishicha is kona. In a Torah for metatalin mos akonos, the kona with the money, but chazal, because v'gzeira derabbanan, they changed things and they said Mashiach should be kona, meaning the most are not going to be kona until the lokeach actually is Moshe, the object that he's being kona. They quote the Machne Ephraim, Nilchas Kinyan Mashiach is Machmer, that one should try to pay with money. You should buy the Lulav and Esther with money. Give the money, give the cash to the Mocher in order that he'll own the Lulav and Esther on the first day. Because it says, Lokachem Lachem Bayom HaRishon. There's a din of Lachem on the first day of Sukkot. It has to belong to you. So it has to belong to you. You have to be careful. We're talking about a din daraisa. So Dvar Torah Mos Konos. You know Chazal say, Mid Rabbana Mashiach is Kone. But Mid HaTorah, Dvar Torah Mos Konos. You still have to be Kone with money. So therefore, you have to be careful to pay Dafa with cash. Make sure that you give the cash to the mocha. Don't tell him you're going to pay him later. You got to pay him, because until you pay him, you're not actually coming. There's a discussion whether a check is considered kesef. Is it really considered ma'os or not? Some are machmir dafka to pay with cash, not to pay with a check. Rabbi Shechter thought that you didn't really have to be machmir for the machna fan to begin with, because he said that everyone holds that chotzer is kona min haTorah. So even if you're not kona with kesef, but you bring the lulav and esrog home before Yom Tov, comes into your house, and you're kona midin chotzer anyway. The machna allows you to be kona. You're kona midin chotzer. So even if you didn't pay with the cash, it still should be fine. He's allowing you to be kona. So once you're kona with chotzer, then that should be enough minat Torah to say that the lulav and esrog belong to you. Yes. Okay. You're bachur in yeshiva. If you don't own your house, so then you're not going to be able to be kona b'chotzer. So then maybe it's good to pay with cash. Okay, or pay with a debit card. I don't know if the mochim have debit card machines. They have debit cards already. The debit card machines. Pay with a debit card rather than a credit card. I don't know if credit card. I imagine a credit card. Is a credit card called cash? I'm not sure. You pay with a debit card. That's certainly considered cash. If you want to pay with cash, then that's fine. But if you're a married person, you own your own house, so then you can be kona midin chatzim. Okay. The mitzvah in HaTorah of lulav is on the first day of Yom Tov. Lekachtam lechem bayom harishon, priyei tzadar, etc. It's on the first day. But the pasuk also says, "Usmachtam lechem Hashem alakechem shives yamim." That in the mikdash there was a mitzvah simcha of taking a lulav and esrog lefnei Hashem alakechem for 7 days. And of course, we know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was misak in zechel mikdash that kol shiva midrabbanan we take a lulav even outside of the mikdash. Rishonim have a debate. What does it mean b'mikdash? So the Bikurei Yaakov has a famous comment that according to the Rambam, who defines mikdash as all of Yerushalayim, not just the Beis HaMikdash, coupled with the other Rambam and Hilchos Beis HaBechira, that Kedushas Yerushalayim still exists b'zman hazeh. So person on Chol HaMoed would have a mitzvah d'oraisa to take a lulav and esrog in the old city of Yerushalayim. So even if he took a lulav and esrog, he davened in a minyan outside of the old city, if he wants to visit the old city later, then he should take the lulav and esrog with him, because he has a mitzvah d'oraisa. Outside of the old city, he only had a mitzvah d'rabbanan. He fulfilled his mitzvah kedasu kedin. It's not like you have to daven at the kotel every day of Chol HaMoed. He fulfilled his mitzvah kedasu kedin outside the kotel, outside the old city. But if you're going to go visit the kotel, you're going to go visit the old city, then you should take a lulav and esrog there too to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa. And they say that that's what the Bris Kerav was knowing to do when he went to the old city later in the day on Chol HaMoed. He took his lulav and esrog with him to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa of usmachtam lefnei Hashem alakechem shives yamim. We mentioned that the shear of the Hadassim and the Aravas is Gimel Tvachim. So the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah says that the shear of the Lulav is Shlosha Tvachim Kedei L'Naneyabo. The Gemara says that really you should read the Mishnah U'Kedei L'Naneyabo. That it's 3 Tvachim plus 1. It's really 4 Tvachim. That the Hadassim and the Aravas are 3 Tvachim and the Lulav has to stick out one more tefach. What does it mean it sticks out one more tefach? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Ran that means that the shedra of the lulav has to stick out further than the hadassim and the aravas. That would mean here. Shedra ends over here. The hadassim and the aravas are over here. So there has to be a tefach of lulav of the shedra above. People don't know this. They think that they just need a tefach on the top of the lulav, but it has to be a tefach of the shedra that remains, that's extra in the lulav above the hadassim and the aravos. The Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Zayin says that lulav v'yamin v'esrog v'smol. You're supposed to take the lulav in the right hand, the esrog in the smol, the three minim in the right hand, and the esrog in the left hand. And the Beis Yosef quotes from the Orchas Chaim that if you take the lulav and esrog in one hand, you're not yotze. Because the Gemara says on Daf Lamed Daled, Yochol Yehi Esrog Imahim Baguda Achas. I would think that maybe the Esrog should be tied together with the other Minim, Kamash Malon. No. It sounds like it's not supposed to be with the other Minim. So the Orchas Chaim says from that you see that the Lulav and the Esrog have to be in separate hands. So the Taz disagrees and he says, what kind of a Raya is that? The only Kapeda is that it shouldn't be Baguda Achas, that you can't tie the Esrog with the other Minim, but to hold them in the same hand, that shouldn't be a problem. The halacha, the Mishnah Berurah, says that you should be machmer. If you can, you should be machmer to hold the lulav and the esrog in two different hands. The lulav, the three minim in the right hand, and the esrog in the left hand. Rav Shechter quotes in the Nefesh HaRav that the Mogen Avram felt that even during Halal and Hoshanis, you should hold the lulav and esrog in two different hands. And he said that was the minigan brisk, that for Hoshanis there was someone who would walk backwards. That the Shliach Tzibur would hold his lulav and esrog, but he couldn't hold his siddur. So they didn't have all the fancy cards that we have as manazes. So someone from the kohol would hold the siddur for the shliach tzibur, and he walked backwards in front of the shliach tzibur. I wasn't there, I can't tell you, but that's what they say. In the Nefesh HaRav, he tells that's what the story was in Brisk. So they were very makbid for this. They were very makbid that the lulav and esrog should be held in two different hands. What does a lefty do? Says the machlokas, the machaber, and the ramah. The Mechaber says that the lefty holds the lulav and esrog like everyone else. He holds the lulav in his right hand and the esrog in his left hand. And the Ramah says, no, he should split it. He should switch it, excuse me. He should hold the lulav in yamin didei, in his right hand, which is his left hand, and the esrog in the other hand. Some, I imagine the Sfaradim just hold the lulav and esrog in the regular, in the lulav in the right hand and the esrog in the left hand. Ashkenazim commonly are machmer for the Ramah, but they machmer for the other shittas too. So at the end, they try to switch the hands. They'll switch the lulav and esrog to make sure that they'll be yotzi the other way as well. But I think for most, for the halal and for the hoshanas, they'll hold the lulav and esrog. The lulav will be in the left hand, and the esrog will be in the right hand. The Mishnah Berurah points out that even a lefty doesn't switch the hadassim and the arabas. Those are still the hadassim are on the right, and the arabas are on the left. There's a machlokas tanoim in the Gemara with a lulav tzarech eged or not. According to Rabbi Yehuda, tzarech eged, and according to the Rabbanan, it's the ain tzarech eged. They learn from different psukim, but the Gemara says that even according to the Rabbanan, the Rabbi Yehuda, lemitzvah lechatchila, mishum zakeli vanveyu, one should be ma'aged the lulav, you should tie the lulav. Rashi there writes that just like according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's an inyan to tie the lulav with a kesher shel kayama, according to the chumrah of the Rabbanan, according to the mitzvah of the Rabbanan, one should tie it with the kesher shel kayama as well. So some point out that to fulfill this din, you should really tie it kesher agabi kesher. I'm not talking about the rings that you put around the lulav, but one should tie the minim together with the kesher agabi kesher, not just using a koshikol. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from some achronim that they had a holder. The hadassim and the arabas were put in the holder, and you put the lulav in the holder also. So he says that according to some, really you should have a kesher agabi kesher. Because if not, then it's not an eged. And according to the Chachamim, the Chatchili is supposed to have an eged and a lulav. Reb Chaim and the Rav were both machmer not to use a koshikal at all, because they felt that ein eged achar eged, ein eged achar eged. If you put the hadassim and the aravas in the holder, and then you're going to tie them to the lulav, so then that's considered an eged already. So then it doesn't make any sense to tie them together, right? So it's ein eged achar eged. So they felt that you should tie the hadassim and the arabas to the lulav directly, not to put them in the koshikal. Rabbi Shechter and the Nefesh HaRav pointed out something else from the Rav, that you know people have a tendency of taking off the koshikal and putting it back in the refrigerator to preserve the hadassim and the arabas. So he said that's lechara going to be a problem as well, because then when you put the koshikal back in the lulav, then what are you doing? I mean, generally people have some other kind of piece of the lulav that they tie the koshikal to the lulav. But if you're not going to redo that knot, if you're just going to put the koshikal with that tie back on the lulav, it's tasav alumina asli, you're not doing an asiya the next day, so you're not doing an eged the next day. So if you hold that you need a real eged, then that would be a problem. If you hold like the Mishnah Berurah, that just having the holder is sufficient, so then this wouldn't be an issue anyway, because you don't need the separate tie. But if you hold that you actually have to tie the minim to the lulav, that you need a real eged, so then you can't just take the ring with the tie, take the holder and the tie, and just put it back on the lulav. You actually have to retie the hadassim and the arabas to the lulav itself.
So accordingly, if you would take the hadassim and arabas out and put them back into
If you hold that the kashrugal is enough, but if you hold that you have to tie them, then you actually would have to take another lulav string, another piece of the lulav, and actually tie them onto the lulav itself. One final point. Some are makbid to take multiple esrogim to try to be yotzei the mitzvah properly. So they tell a story that Reb Chaim was always medaktik, I think the Brisker Rebbe as well, that when he had different esrogim in front of him, and one was a suffik murkav but mehuder, and the other was vade kosher, so he always would take the suffik murkav first, because he felt that if you're yotzei the mitzvah, then you can't do a hidden mitzvah after that. If you take the esrog that's vada kosher, then it'll turn out that you were yotze the mitzvah for sure. Not sure if it was mahudah, but you were yotze the mitzvah certainly. So then, if you're going to take the other min that's more mahudah, you're not going to be yotze the din of hidah mitzvah with that esrog, because once you were yotze the ikar mitzvah, hidah mitzvah can't be separate from the ikar mitzvah. It has to be joined together with the mitzvah. So he would take the esrog that's more mahudah first, the suffik murkav, and then he would take the other essence. That's a big discussion in the poskim. Does hidden mitzvah really have to be connected to the ikar mitzvah? Can it be separate from the ikar mitzvah? The whole discussion of Tshuva and the Beis Halevi about that in terms of mila. Rabbi Bleich has an article in the Zichron Harav. He has an article where he discusses this at great length. But that's a chumra that the briskas have, that if they want to take multiple esrogim, sometimes a person sees his friend has a nice esrog. He wants to try his esrog as well. But if you took an esrog that wasn't suffik murkav, you would definitely yotzei. According to the Brisker Rebbe, there's no point in taking a second esrog, because since you've been yotzei, then the din of hidden mitzvah is not going to apply to you. I think there are two very important lessons, alpi hashkof, alpi musa, that one should always keep in mind with the dalet mina. That is that, you know, generally speaking, a person might invest a lot of time and effort to pick a beautiful set of dalet minim, and then, you know, he goes around with the hoshanas and he sees a lulav and esrog that someone else is carrying, and it looks so nice that he feels bad. He looks at the esrog that someone else is carrying, and it looks nicer than his esrog. But then when he gets closer, if he asks him if he can see the esrog, he sees that the person, that his esrog also has some brown dots on it, it has other things in it, but from afar you can't see this. I think there are two important lessons to take home from that. First of all, pnimius counts. Just because mitzad chitzoni is looking from afar, you don't necessarily see all the blemishes of the esrog. The blemishes count, right? The dots do count. So pnimius counts. We shouldn't focus on the chitzonius of the dalet minim. We shouldn't focus on the chitzonius of our own lives, but rather we should focus on the pnimius. That's the first important lesson to keep in mind. And the second important lesson is look at your own set of dalet minim. Don't look at your friend's set. I guarantee you that if you think your set has some problems, his set also has problems. Everyone in life should look at their own situations. Don't look at someone else's situations. We look at our own situations and we're happy with what we have, then we'll be much happier people. We should all exceed Vachsimatov.